From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project for this particular week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. There he is. There he is.
How'd you do? How'd you do?
It's so wonderful to see you. Barbara Lombardo, for a long time, editor of the Saratogian, and more recently teaching at UAlbany. So you'll tell us a little bit about your students in a moment.
Great.
great. And Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus now of the Daily Freeman and Associated Publications in Kingston, New York.
Yeah, I don't do much of anything anymore.
You don't do much of anything?
No,
anymore.
I'm catching up on Netflix, and I still do a lot of reading.
A lot of reading?
A lot of reading of periodicals.
What do you find is your favorite news source?
You're going to ask me a Sarah Palin question?
Can you see Russia?
I still read online or in print 5 to 6 newspapers a day.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great thing about retirement. You have time to do that.
Wait a second. I do it. This is Alan speaking, and I do it. I do it on a regular basis all night long. All I do is read the newspapers.
And then you like to criticize us all the time.
Yeah, imagine that.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, from his perspective as an expert, then, I guess it makes it possible.
Oh, sharper than a tooth ray.
Doesn't it make your skin crawl that the broadcast media, particularly cable news, has bypassed print newspapers in many respects, yet it relies on print journalists to fill in much of their day?
There would be no news feed for Facebook if there were not, there would be no real news for Facebook consumers to read if it weren't for newspapers.
Now, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but isn't that the complaint we're hearing from all of the editors and publishers of newspapers, which are, you're absolutely right, doing such important work, but also who are really ticked off that they're having to do all this firing and that they're having tough times. And so they say, well, we do all the work and the other guys don't do,
Well, that's why the terms curated content and aggregated content.
Sure.
What it is stealing content, using content that you did not originate and talking about and spreading the word about it. And
Rex has had something to say about that.
Well, the cost to produce a story is a lot higher than the value you get from a link on a website. So you put a story out there and some aggregator takes it and makes it look like their own. And yes, it links back to your site if they're doing it right. I mean, sometimes they just swipe the content, but we've lived with that for years, from as we've said here, from the origins of television news, it was really playing off newspaper reporting.
But Rex, don't you get something from that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You get the link, you get the value of the page view, but it's a lot lower than the cost of the
absolutely.
And sometimes, if enough of the story has been presented by the aggregator or curator, then you're not getting the engagement that you need to show advertisers.
Right, people just skimming the homepage of the aggregator, and they don't need to cling to your site. Anyway, I digress.
All right.
For starting us off on a short round.
You poor people.
So some people now are leaving Facebook, that they're upset with the values and the policies of Facebook revealed by recent testimony showing that Facebook is actually doing more, that the company is giving other tech giants more intrusive access to users' personal data than has previously been disclosed. And so a lot of people are saying, farewell to Facebook. Casey Hunt, the NBC reporter and host, said, for example, the most recent, who said that she just doesn't trust Facebook anymore. And who says, to anyone who uses this as a place to get news, I urge you, don't at all. It's bad for your brain, divides you from your neighbors, and it's worse for democracy. But the downside is I like being able to see what my old high school friends are doing on Facebook.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, I used to advise, when we first started getting into the computer age in the newspaper business, and we first started putting, what do they call VDTs? We would put on every desk, video display terminals. And we would always warn the reporters or anybody who had a VDT, don't type anything into this machine that you wouldn't want to see on the bulletin board in the back of the office or in the newspaper. I mean, once you put material in the computer, it's fair game. And if you don't know that going in and then you're shocked when your material shows up elsewhere, shame on you.
Well, somebody should shake the finger at Facebook and say, hey, come on now, tell us what's going on. But I'm with Rex on this one. I love Facebook. I love going, seeing what my relatives are doing, seeing what my grandchildren are doing. I think that they have to be more transparent, but I like them.
Well, here's what the problem is that they have not told us right. the truth until now. If it weren't for New York Times reporting, we wouldn't even know this now, because Mark Zuckerberg went before Congress, and it sounds like he gave, let's say, incomplete answers to questions, because they've allowed Amazon to get users' names and contact information through their friends. Facebook let Yahoo view streams of friends' posts as recently as this summer, despite statements that they had stopped this kind of thing. So it's wonderful for us to have this access, but what Facebook is basically inviting is government restriction. Facebook, by this kind of activity, is basically saying to Congress, go ahead, restrict us or break us up the way government did the phone company.
Now, you know, that's so interesting that you say that, Rex, because you would be off the roof if Congress had ever decided that we don't like what the newspapers are doing, so we want to put some kind of restrictions on newspapers. But you're not so much when it comes to regulating other disseminators of news.
But
like
we're talking
Facebook.
About what is happening with the information that you are providing.
Yes, we are.
And sometimes inadvertently providing, and sometimes you're not even providing it. Wasn't it that your friends on Facebook might be inadvertently providing your information to
right.
these other sources?
Right.
And for Facebook not to be upfront and telling people that this is happening, although when a few months ago when all this privacy stuff started to come out and they said make sure you people were advised make sure that you read all your privacy statements.
Yeah, right.
And like I tried to do that. It's ridiculous. You can't if you want to use the medium that you're selecting, you're just going to accept.
Well, to what extent, if at all, is what Facebook is purported to be doing different than what print publications, particularly I think magazines, have been doing forever, which is selling their subscription lists, for example, to advertisers or to mail order houses? Is there a similarity? Or
well, it's a very interesting question.
Well, it's the secretiveness of this, I think.
Well, I think they would argue that that big long privacy statement that you read, it's probably in there somewhere.
Probably is in there.
Yeah. Now, I had an instant that I noticed the other day that I don't think it's Facebook's fault, but I think it's Apple's fault, although I'm not sure. I was in the process of going to a car dealer and I was dealing with a salesperson and I texted that person back and forth. And then the other day on my Facebook page, it says, do you want to be a friend of this guy? Now, how the heck did they know that I knew this guy? I didn't.
He told them.
I think I think that you're right, though. That's what's different is that there is a lot more. What Facebook is able to sell is your activity. When I was trying to help my daughter when she got right out of college to buy a car, I did a lot of searching on different kinds of cars and different vehicles. And now, ever since then, I've been bombarded with advertising pushes from those. I think that that kind of behavior, without you signing up for anything, you're getting your personal data sold by Facebook.
But in the instance that I just described, it was Facebook suggesting this person. I didn't write about it on my Facebook page. The only computerized version of our contact was a text message. So is Apple involved as well?
Well, how do you know what he did?
I don't, but I'm not sure what he would have done.
Well, he was a car salesman.
So
he created some file about you somewhere?
But the end result of which would be I would be a friend of him. It wasn't the dealership. It was him
Maybe
personally.
Maybe you'll get a better deal if you're a friend.
Too late. I've already signed it on.
So I think that 2019 is going to be the year that we see congressional action concerning the privacy of citizens. And you're right, Alan, some of this is going to stick in the craw of those of us who have had tried to argue for access to information. But it's always a balancing act. You know, there are regulations. The First Amendment has never been absolute. We have libel standards in this country that we all have to follow. There are privacy matters. Last week or the week before last on this show, I was describing the concerns about unauthorized use of photographs. You can't just download a photograph from a social media site and use it because that material belongs to somebody, and they actually can exert their own copyright privilege.
Well, I still believe that we're within the window that this is very early in the development and evolution of this technology. And it's much like, you know, 5 or 8 years ago, we sat at this studio talking about our complaints about how reader comments were handled or not handled on websites. Alan was a big proponent of more regulation of the trolls. And in fact, that has evolved. And I suspect that this, what we're talking about now, in 10 years or less, is going to change as well. And there'll be, these issues are coming up and we're dealing with them.
Okay. So here's a number of the day, 19. 19 is the number of companies who have stopped advertising on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News since he said that immigration makes the United States dirtier. So what do we think about advertiser boycotts? Do you like this one? Did you ever, when you were as a publisher, did you ever have an advertiser boycott?
I did. I hate them.
The boycott.
I hate to have a boycott. We used to hear from our salespeople that advertisers didn't want to, would-be advertisers were not buying space in our newspaper because they didn't like X, Y, or Z of what we published. And I said, you need to tell them, you don't advertise in our paper because we're nice guys. You advertise in our paper because we will bring business to your door because we are the most highly circulated publication in the area, and advertising in our newspaper works. So I sort of still feel the same way. Do I like Tucker Carlson? Do I hope he goes out of business tomorrow? Yeah, but I don't like this kind of interference.
Well,
and I understand it, but I don't like it.
The way you described the reason for not boycotting makes sense. That said, somebody who owns a business, the place where they can make their statement is through their pocketbook. And if they need to say, we're not going to support you for whatever reason with the pocketbook, it's hard to disagree with that. We had an advertiser, a big local company. I remember when Monty Trammer was our publisher. And
we remember Monty. We loved him. He was on the show.
He's terrific.
He had a saying, always take the money.
Exactly.
Well, he had another saying, that the news columns are not for sale. And I heard him say that at an event. Where a publisher from another area newspaper was saying, if you take out an ad, we will do a story about you.
Whoa.
He said the news columns were not for sale. And when this local advertiser was upset because of something I was putting into the news columns concerning this company, he said, if that runs, I'm pulling my advertisement. And Monty said, then I guess you have no choice than to pull your advertisement. And that guy pulled his advertisement until Monty left the paper. He blamed him. So for at least a decade.
Wow.
So that was a good lesson.
It's a great lesson.
Okay, and we were able to afford to, you know,
so let me pull
that. That was another thing. In those days, we could absorb it.
so let me pull the panel in terms of this very question that Rex has so perceptively raised with us. In other words, how many people here think it is wrong of the advertisers to use that clout that way? I think we've already heard.
Well,
from you.
I think it's short-sighted. I understand the motivation, but I don't believe that the motivators are seeing the other side.
Okay, Rexy, you.
I don't like the idea of advertiser boycotts based upon content.
But that's really the only way to your voice heard.
It is the only way.
Pardon me for interrupting you.
That's quite all right.
Continue to do so. the idea with Tucker Carlson. I'm glad that you called it a boycott and not censorship.
Oh,
because it is not censorship.
No,
nobody
not at all.
Is stopping him from saying it. We're just saying if you're going to do that, we're not going to support you.
I think there's a difference, Alan, to answer your question, between an advertiser stepping forward. I mean, it's the only really meaningful way that they can have an influence on Fox News is for advertisers to withdraw, I think, and to try to apply public pressure. That's different from a situation where, well, we confronted, for example, in the Times Union confronted in this community, an effort by a very powerful politician to draw advertisers together to boycott the Times Union because of our reporting about that politician. Now, that's different matter. That to me is really an egregious use of political power. And fortunately, the advertisers did not join in that, to my knowledge. I think it's a little bit different to say we're going to boycott because we don't like the content versus we're going to boycott because the reporting is too honest, too trustworthy.
Well, then they didn't even pull out of Fox. I think that most of those advertisers just transferred their money to another element on Fox.
Right.
And as Paul Fari, the reporter for the Washington Post, puts it, writing about this, he says, advertiser boycotts, such as the one this week against Tucker Carlson, tend to be like snowstorms. Initially disruptive and attention-getting, but usually ephemeral. In time, as the ardor on social media cools, they pass.
And I hope that Fox does well or that they it doesn't pass there. But the problem with, for local media especially, if you have a big contingent of advertisers who don't want to advertise with you because of the political position that real or perceived that the paper has taken or that they believe the owners of the paper have, that could be dangerous to democracy.
But I'm very interested in something that Rex said here, which is that this politician tried to get the advertisers into a room and said, we don't want you to advertise on the Times Union. Mm-hmm. Obviously bad news and a little bit different than independent decisions being made. But in the end, because we've had it happen right here at public radio, in the end, there is a decision on the part of the people they're trying to bring into the room. This is either right or wrong. And in your case, it was wrong, both in terms of self-serving. We don't think this is good for us, but also whatever intellectual reasons there are here. And that's exactly what happened here on public radio.
Right. There was a self-serving benefit to not withdrawing their underwriting support from WAMC, I'm sure. But then there may have been a conscience matter also saying, you know, I really shouldn't engage in a boycott because of content.
Isn't good for me.
This is not good.
Well, I also, on more than one occasion, I would have politicians in my office, politicians who had threatened either on other radio stations or wherever, they didn't like the newspaper and they were urging people in the community not to buy advertising or the paper itself. And I would have discussions with them pointing out that you need to understand that the people who you are hurting financially here are people who pay taxes and live in this community. And this is not just an isolated case of angst that you're trying to portray.
But they didn't give a damn what you were saying.
Some of them didn't, and some of them admitted they never thought about that.
Coming full circle to what you said the first time when we opened this part of the conversation, the advertisers that are smart, the advertisers need the newspaper or whatever the outlet is to spread the word about their business.
Right.
And that, so the politician trying to get the advertisers in the Times Union, mm-hmm. probably not in their best interest.
Right. Though, of course, as we've been saying, with the digital world rising in importance as a way of accessing people, our dominance in that sense no longer exists, and we have less leverage than we used to. I'm very lucky. I work for a publisher who George Hearst kind of understands this. His dad was a newspaper publisher, and I think George just grew up with the notion that this is what newspapers do. And I've said before in this show, we had an auto dealer whose advertising contract with the Times Union was huge. Who pulled all of his advertising from the Times Union because of coverage. And I didn't even know about it. My publisher didn't mention it to me. And a few weeks later, the advertising account representative was whining about it. And that was how I found out about it. George Hearst just simply does not follow such pressure. It's fairly...
That's great.
But think about it. 20 years ago, that kind of an account, we would sort of just shrug our shoulders. And now if you pulled a big account from your newspaper right after you've done the budget where you've been fine-tuning every last drop and then all of a sudden there's a six-figure account, that's one or two people immediately.
Dr. Chartok is raising his hand.
So I want to ask the panel a practical question. What if you have an editor on a newspaper somewhere who decides that what you are writing in a column, for example, is bad for business?
If the editor decides this?
That's right. Calls you up on the phone and says, this is not good. This is bad for business. We don't want to be ticking off people in our community as a result of this. How much freedom should a columnist have? My question.
Well, I think once you give a column to a writer, that person has extraordinary freedom to write what he or she thinks is right. But if you think, as an editor...
He's clearing his throat.
Yeah, right.
Here comes the
I've always pointed that out. Yeah.
If you think that that content is journalistically unsound, that's a different matter from if you think it's going to affect business. So I don't think that that...
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think that an editor should tolerate the notion or should ever say to a columnist, you're bad for business. You could say your column is stupid or something like that. You know, that's with it. I don't think we'd use those words, would we, former editors in the room?
Well, but what if, Rex, just to pursue this for a second, what if, in fact, forget about the business part of it, the columnist is writing about police inaction or the fact that the police department wasn't doing what it should, and you get a call saying, we don't really like the fact that you're picking on the police.
Uh-huh.
And the columnist responds, wait a second now, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we supposed to be talking truth to power? So then that's the question of whether that kind of interference is a no.
Just this week, I had a politician who wanted to have lunch with me, and it turns out that the topic of the conversation was one of our columnists who this politician was complaining about. I mentioned it in passing to my publisher, whose response was, did you explain that that's what columnists do? This is our role. We are sometimes a thorn in the flesh. So I don't think that ticking people off is a reason to withhold publication.
Yeah, I think depending on the relationship between the publication and the columnist, is it a freelancer, is it a staff writer, and what is the purpose of the column, so that an editor would have the responsibility of making sure that a columnist hasn't made his or her column into a mouthpiece for a personal vendetta, beating a horse to death week after week or an inordinate amount of time on a certain topic just to beat somebody up.
Have you ever done it? Have you ever talked to a columnist and said you're using this column in a way we don't think is appropriate?
Years ago, one of my favorite columnists continues to be John Gray, who tends to write on non-controversial subjects. But years ago, we had a columnist in Saratoga who was writing about issues having to do with City Hall and accusing people of things that could be considered libelous. And he didn't have the reporting to back it up.
Well, that's
right. And when I stopped, said, we can't publish this because you're not backing up your opinion with fact, he maintained that he had the right to, it was a column, he maintained he had the right to express his opinion. And when I dumped him out of the paper, he started his own sheet. Back then, it was pre-internet, so then he had his own sheet that he would publish one page and hand it out around town.
Yeah, you don't yield your editing authority.
No, of course not.
But what you do when you designated somebody as a columnist is you say, okay, you have more freedom than other people do to offer opinions. But when that person sort of abuses that by having unsubstantiated allegations or goes off on a tangent, we had a columnist who went off on a tear on a particular issue attacking a police investigation. And I thought it was really inappropriate and had a conversation with him about it.
Mm.
He thought that my conversation with him was inappropriate as well.
Now, what about you have a columnist, perhaps as a freelance columnist, and his or her column is costing you X amount of dollars a week or whatever the arrangement is. And you determine that although the column is perfectly acceptable by all measures of editorial judgment, it is not succeeding in drawing and attracting new readers. And in fact, maybe you may even be losing readers. At that point, should the editor not make a financial decision?
On the other hand, what if the columnist is getting more clicks in the electronic age than anybody else is? That's quite the difference.
Right. Well, then that might be that columns may mean more money for that.
Do you keep lousy content because it's popular? Is Alan's question?
Well, no, and maybe it's not lousy content. Maybe it's just fear.
Well, I'm not saying the content is lousy. I'm quite the contrary. I could be saying it's a good column, but people are just not reacting favorably to it. Do you keep using it?
These questions will have to wait until next week.
I don't have to worry about this anymore.
It's a great discussion, by the way.
I'm glad we have your column in the Saratogian and the Records.
So we have Alan Shartok and we have Ira Fussfeld. We have Barbara Lombardo and I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, columnist, commentator, and author. Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.